Funding for Think comes from SMU Master and Doctor of Liberal Studies programs.
You're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Lauren Silverman, sitting in this week for Chris Boyd. Most of us don't remember taking our first steps, but if you've ever seen the smile on a baby's face when she learns to lift a leg and tilt forward, you know the joy it must bring. The feeling of freedom is contagious. Walking means power, independence. Losing that ability, being wheelchair-bound, can be pretty disheartening. It can also make it more difficult to stay healthy. Technology, though, is changing what it means to walk, and Amanda Boxtel knows that better than anyone. She's executive director of the Bridging Bionics Foundation, which aims to connect mobility with bionic technology. She wrote about her experimentation with exoskeletons in July's issue of the Scientific American. Amanda, welcome to Think.
Thank you so much for having me, Lauren.
So take us back for a second to February of 1992. You were in your 20s, very active, and one day you went skiing.
Yes, it was an emotional day for me. I just wasn't feeling right, and a wave of just swept through my body as if I had no business being on the mountain that day. Kraken Noon Club, I'm not really an early riser. I've learned to be over the years. I rode the chairlift and looked at the view as if I was looking for the last time. I skied down on purpose to remain visible beneath the chairlift. I stopped, I looked at the view again, and it was just an intermediate run. I took off, and as if in slow motion, I crossed my tips. I did a somersault. I landed on my back. I shattered four vertebrae in a split second. An electric current zapped through my legs. They crumbled on top of me as if a light switch had been turned off. There was nothing, no movement below my pelvis, and no sensation. I was paralyzed. It can happen to anybody. And my life was forever changed.
Now, of course, being paralyzed from the waist down, it means you can't walk, but it's more than that.
Oh, it's so much more than not being able to walk. And often when we sustain a chronic spinal cord injury, a chronic spinal injury such as mine, people just assume, oh, they see the physicality. They see the visible disability that, oh, she can't walk. But it's the loss of my sexuality. It's the loss of my ability to void urine and use my bowels on my own. It's decreased circulation on my legs. I'm prone to edema, to secondary complications, to possibly, if I sit in the same position, to getting a pressure sore. These are secondary complications that can, however, be avoided today with the newness of technology and the introduction of exoskeleton technology.
So what exactly is exoskeleton technology? Because it sounds very foreign.
It does. It sounds like something from a sci-fi movie, right?
Yeah.
So augmenting human potential and strength and mobility is no longer a stretch of the imagination. We have the ability to get someone who has lower extremity weakness or paralysis to get them up standing and walking in a very natural gait. So back then, when I was 24 years old, I'm now 47, so I've been paralyzed for 23 years, yet I've maintained my mobility, my range of motion and flexibility. But back then, the doctor said those words to me, Amanda, you'll never walk again. And I have reason to believe that doctors now have no excuses. They can say, yes, well, it's going. You've got your challenging road ahead, but there is a possibility for you to get up on your own two legs with the advent of new technology. And so it'll just look a little different and feel a little different, but let's show you how.
And what I see in the photos, In the article that you wrote in Scientific American, there's a photo of you standing in an exoskeleton in 2011. Mm-hmm. And it looks almost like you're wearing a backpack. You have what look like crutches, and your legs are in sort of braces. Describe how this works.
There are several different manufacturers of exoskeletons made in countries all over the world, and they're all very similar in how they work. But let's keep in mind, this is the beginning of the technology. And so imagine a metal outfit that encases your body. So I'm paralyzed from the waist down. And how does it stand me up and walk? I don the exoskeleton. I transfer from my wheelchair. I get into the device. I strap it on with Velcro straps. And there's padding throughout the device. Once it's strapped onto me, I'm able to stand up in this device. Remember, it's a wearable robot. The outer frame mimics my internal bone structure. There's six joints, just like I have joints in my ankles, my knees, and my hips. And there's four motors. The motors are akin to my muscles. It gives me power to help me stand up and walk. And then the robot has sensors throughout the device. And most of the sensors are on the feet. And in this particular device is a gyroscope as well. And those sensors send signals to a computer on the backpack. And there's two lithium-ion batteries. And it's as if my nerves are sending signals to my brain. So when I stand up and I take a step, it's all about I play an integral role with the robot. When I shift my weight correctly and I hit my forward target and my lateral target, the device will then take another step automatically.
Are you actually shifting the weight in your legs, or is it sensing what movement is it picking up if for someone who can't really make much movement with their leg?
So when I shift my weight, I find my center of gravity standing up. And then when I make a slight forward shift and I hit the forward target, and then there's a side or lateral target as well, it's ever so subtle. When I hit both of those targets, the robot has sensors in the feet. It's an Exo from Exobionics, manufactured in California. Then the robot will automatically take another step. But there's another level of intelligence, artificial intelligence. I have trace muscles in my legs, muscle power. And that's from regaining some muscle power after a controversial stem cell treatment way back about 7 years ago.
Yeah,
and we'll we can get there. But
yes.
With that trace muscle power, I'm able to put it in a variable assist modality, this robot. I'm able to contribute to my step, give it my maximum effort. I work up a sweat. My heart beats incredibly. So it becomes a rehabilitative tool. And then the robot is intelligent enough to help gauge how much I'm inputting and then how much it needs to give me to help me finish or complete my step.
So this is something you really have to learn to use. I couldn't just put one on and try and go about my business.
Well, and that's where we're at today. This is the beginning of the technology. This is truly a rehabilitation device, and it's for rehabilitation centers to be used with a physical therapist. And so there is a learning curve involved. But it's like learning any new sport. Lauren, when I learned how to ski again, I was white-knuckled. I was fearful. I was trembling and shaking in my ski as I went down that ski slope. But then, after I gave it time, patience, determination, will, I was able to, when I knew I could make a right and a left and a stop, then I rocketed to freedom. And there's a lot of similarities with learning this technology. That a physical therapist will help a new patient to stand up, walk, take their first steps, and help coach them through that learning curve so they become independent, because that's the goal, right? We want to aspire to being as independent as possible in anything that we pursue.
Now, wheelchairs have been around for centuries. I even saw an image of King Philip of Spain during, I think it was 16th century, in one with or an early version of a wheelchair with armrests, which was I had never seen. How long has the exoskeleton been around?
Oh, both of those are actually interesting questions. With the wheelchair, I think it dates back to 1500 AD in China. I think that was one of the first images that I've seen. And so, yes, it's the wheelchair has become the universal symbol of disability. Yet, is it empowering? Is that symbol empowering? And we are on the precipice of redefining the word disabled and that symbol. And the wheelchair, for some, it becomes their entire identity. Now, with exoskeleton technology, we go back into the turn of the century. I think there was a Russian engineer that actually drew the very first renderings of an exoskeleton, and then it wasn't until GE created this crazy exoskeleton suit called the Hardy Man that weighed 1,500 pounds and was built to carry 1,500 pounds, and it was built by GE, and it was totally impractical. And so it took until 2004 for that impractical barrier to be broken. And so a medical application was created from what was a military version. And yes, we've received a lot of funding for this type of technology through the military, which is great to augment strength and potential for soldiers who, you know, have a lot of back pain and strain from carrying heavy loads. But then that transferred to a medical application. And now we're able to get anybody with lower extremity weakness or paralysis to have them stand up and walk. And there's so many different devices that are blossoming around the world. And I've made it my goal, my personal mission, to walk in as many devices as possible and speak from personal experience. Often, this article from Scientific American Mind Magazine,
which we're going to get to in just a minute. We are going to take a quick break. You're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Lauren Silverman, in this week for Chris Boyd. And today we're talking about exoskeletons with Amanda Boxtel. You can join our conversation. Call 800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. You can also send me a tweet. I'm @LSilverwoman. We'll be back with more from Amanda Boxtel after a short break.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program. You can apply now for fall and design your own master's degree at SMU, a customizable evening master's degree for working professionals. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on 90.1. I'm Lauren Silverman, sitting in this week for Chris Boyd. We're talking about exoskeletons and learning to walk for a second time with Amanda Boxtel. She's been experimenting with exoskeletons for years and wrote about how technology could redefine disability in the July issue of Scientific American. Amanda, what was the first exoskeleton that you put on like?
Oh, the very first exoskeleton that I put on was then called E-Legs at Berkeley Bionics, which has now been rebranded to Exobionics in California. And it was extremely emotional, to tell you the truth. I strapped it on. I stood up. I was able to look across the room above things. My perspective is navels to nostrils. And to be able to stand up and look at someone eye to eye, to have that delicious heart-to-heart hug, that was the emotional gift of a lifetime. I went back to a hotel room and I cried. And I cried hard, because imagine wanting something for so long, for back then 18 years, and for that moment to all happen in one upright, beautiful instance. It was hard for me to wrap words around it.
It sounds really powerful. Was this something you knew you'd be able to use again, or was it a once in a blue moon opportunity?
I was determined, and learn a little bit about my personality. They had asked me to try this device and to get up and walk for National Geographic Television in front of a national audience. And I was given 4 days to do this and to master this, no pressure. And so I did it, and I was able to give feedback to the engineers. And I was just Facebooking and messaging with another really phenomenal person, Robert Wu, out of the East Coast in New York, who is one of the test pilots for ReWalk, an exoskeleton, a manufacturer that is an Israeli company. And they've come out just yesterday. They launched the personal 6.0 version. And the reason why I mention that is that Robert, just like me, has been able to give this other company the critical feedback that only an end user can give, that only someone who is paralyzed in our predicament can give to improve the technology.
Yes, it really does take someone who has a condition where they can't move like everyone else to give them feedback. What kind of feedback do you give?
Well, it's been really interesting. I've been able to give feedback on the walking trajectory, on the natural gait, on even when a paralyzed person, I mean an able-bodied person gets in the device. It's, think of it, if you tried to get in an exoskeleton, you'd have to really force yourself, Lauren, to turn off your body and not make your legs work and pretend to be paralyzed. Well, here I am. But then there's other things that come with it. I'm very susceptible because I cannot feel, to pressure points and to redness. Mm. And so to be able to give just very simple feedback about, pressure points and strapping and comfort, range of motion, what a person now needs to do to prepare themselves to walk again. And now I say that there's no excuses. I encourage every person out there who has limited mobility to somehow move their bodies. Our bodies are made for mobility. When we sit, we begin to die. And in those darkest hours, I would will myself to say, Amanda, it's up to you and you only. Destiny waits for no woman. And move your body if you don't move it, you'll lose it. And so that's my message. And through creating Bridging Bionics Foundation, I hope to get this technology out to as many individuals and as many communities as possible. But also by supporting research and development, we can usher in the next generation of exoskeletons and increase their access and affordability around the world.
And right now, these are very, very expensive. I saw some, more than $70,000.
And that's the cheapest version. So the exo, you're looking at anywhere from $100 to $150. And then when you throw in a four-year service and warranty contract on top of that, it becomes almost impossible for an individual or communities to have access to this technology. Now, the FDA is another hurdle. Reimbursing reimbursements from insurance companies is another hurdle. How do we surmount these hurdles? ReWalk is the only FDA-approved device for the in-home use, and that's at $70,000. You add another $15,000 for training, you're looking at $85,000. So I'm looking at how do we improve the technology so that we can make it lightweight, affordable. We can minimize the risk of falling. We can individualize the technology and customize it. So rather than mechanizing humans, how do we begin to humanize the machines so it becomes about a human, a paralyzed person giving the feedback and building the technology around the body?
So right now people are not necessarily taking these home. They're using them for physical therapy, for rehabilitation only, and very limited
Well, actually, you're able to take them home all over the world and even in the US with the ReWalk device. It has been approved through the FDA for in-home use and daily living. And with just a spotter, a random, it can be a friend or a family member. However, the EXO that I walk in must be used in a rehabilitative context with a physical therapist only. And that's where it becomes a little limiting. But remember, this is the beginning of the technology. In other countries, there's this amazing device called the Rex from Rex Bionics, made out of New Zealand, and this helps a higher level spinal cord injury, say a cervical level injured person, to stand up and walk and to still get the same benefits. So there's all of these exoskeletons around the world, but they still give the same benefits. When I stand up in a device, Lauren, I feel better in my body. My sleep is improved. I feel as if a veil's been lifted from my head and I have better mental sharpness and acuity, and my neuropathic pain dissipates almost completely, and that my circulation is increased. Our organs are meant to hang. My bladder and bowels work more efficiently, and this is across the board with every end user that I've spoken with that walks in a different device. We have the same therapeutic benefits, and that's the beauty of this technology. We know that the spinal cord is as smart and as malleable as the brain. It can relearn and it can rewire.
You can join our conversation by calling 800-933-5372 or by emailing think@kera.org. Now, anyone who's seen the videos of robots falling down knows that walking is one thing, but being able to go up or down stairs is a whole nother challenge, right?
Yes, and I want to go up and down stairs. But you know what? So many people say, well, Amanda, it's not there yet. It's got so many improvements to make. And yes, my comeback to that is, well, isn't walking enough? Really? I mean, adaptive technology has enabled me to learn how to ski again. I'm a better skier now than I ever was before. I can kayak, I can rock climb, hand cycle, kite surf. I live a rich and full life, yet there's always been a part of me that's yearned to walk again. And this technology is enabling a person to stand up and go through those motions, to have the physical benefits and the psychological benefits. So we're in a new era where augmenting human potential is possible, and we have the most complex neuroprosthetic ever imagined. So I say, prepare your body to walk again. Move it or else you'll lose it. And get up and go through the motions. And let's get this technology into every community possible. And then I have a whole new theory about what the future holds. And we can go there if you want to.
Well, first, a few years ago, you got to participate in a research project to create the first partially 3D printed exoskeleton. Why would we want a 3D printed exoskeleton?
So, as I mentioned before, often we're looking at mechanizing humans, but how do we begin looking at weaving in beauty and design into what is functional? Often we get caught up in the gee whiz potential of technology, and we forget about humanizing the technology itself. So, with 3D printing capabilities, we're able to scan a body and then take those images, create 3D printed models and parts, and put those into an exoskeleton so it's individualized and customized, and it fits the body seamlessly like a glove, almost as if my own DNA was a part of the exoskeleton itself. Now, this was a research and development project. And I see this as the beginnings to the future of creating not only customized and individualized technology and parts so they fit the body, but I take it a step further. I'm all about fashion. Why not create something that's sleek and sexy and beautiful, like the most beautiful sports car, but it can become the most beautiful thing that I wear? Why can't it have high heels? Why can't I slip it on like the undergarment of my future and have it be made from a smart material that is flexible and breathable? And so the 3D printing project was just the beginning of something futuristic that will become a combination of robotics, 3D printing, nanotechnology, smart materials, and it'll just take us, they'll converge and take us into something that's lighter weight, more affordable and accessible for the future.
And maybe a little bit less Velcro, perhaps.
Yes. I mean, thank God for the invention of Velcro. But I got to tell you, I've ruined so many outfits from wearing this device. I'm a girl after all.
Yeah. So exoskeletons, they're not just being developed for people with disabilities, which maybe this is where the fashion conundrum comes in. This is something that the military is very interested in. And as we know, a lot of people in the military who may be testing these may be men, and maybe that's not their first concern. Why does the military want exoskeletons so bad?
Well, that's a whole different field for exoskeleton technology, and there have been several different companies with the help of the military and DARPA, and even overseas, China, Korea, they're all looking at military applications to augment a soldier's strength so that they can, a lot of back injuries come out of the military from carrying extremely heavy loads. But the beauty of taking this out of the military context and into an industrial application, it has vast, vast potentialities in the sense that maybe workers could help reduce back pain and heavy loading by putting this into all types of applications, such as shipping companies, such as emergency first responders, mm-hmm. to use these exoskeletons to help them be more efficient in their work.
Have you worn the exoskeleton in public?
Yes, I have, in many different scenarios.
And
yes.
I'm just curious, I'm sure it's different on stage, but in the actual sort of public in the street, how do people react?
I can remember walking down the streets of Munich in Europe. I've taken this exoskeleton all over the world and introduced it to different countries all over the world. And when we took it outside, I was in a pharmacy, and I was able to reach the very top item on the shelf. I walked down the streets of Munich, and it was interesting because my wheelchair wasn't visible. I actually left my empty wheelchair behind, and people looked at me as if I was normal, whatever normal is. And I was no longer defined in my mind as being disabled. Here I was walking at eye level through a very thick crowd of people, and I was just strutting my stuff. I was eye level, and when people looked at me, they just looked at me as if I was into some really cool contraption. But they didn't know that I was paralyzed. And I found myself wanting to say, "Hey, world, I'm paralyzed. Do you get it? Can you believe it? Here am I walking with you and I'm paralyzed. Yet I'm upright and I'm normal and I'm blending in for the first time in my paralyzed life."
And that must have been intense, because the wheelchair, like you say, is a very defined symbol for disability. And I guess What does the exoskeleton symbolize since it's so new?
You know, I think the exoskeleton symbolizes human ingenuity and the power of technology to be able to turn a life around. And that's where we're at today. We have the ability to make a paradigm shift with this technology. And so we have, regenerative medicine on our side. We have epidural stimulation and all of these new technologies inside the body, FES, functional electrical stimulation on the outside of the body. Yet, where does my hope lie? It lies right here, right now, in bionic exoskeleton technology, because at the end of the day, it's about quality of life. How do we maximize and improve quality of life?
And we'll talk about that in just one more quick break. You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Lauren Silverman, in this week for Chris Boyd. You can join our conversation about exoskeletons by calling 800-933-5372, by emailing think@kera.org, or by sending me a tweet. I'm @LSilverwoman. We'll be back with more from Amanda Boxtel after a break.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program. You can apply now for fall and design your own master's degree at SMU, specializing in communications or organizational dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think. I'm Lauren Silverman, in this week for Chris Boyd. We're talking about how technology could redefine disability with Amanda Boxtel. She's been experimenting with exoskeletons for years and wrote about how technology could redefine disability in the July issue of the Scientific American. Amanda, you started a group called the Bridging Bionics Foundation in California. What's the goal?
Actually, Bridging Bionics Foundation is based out of Colorado, and the goal is to bridge mobility with bionic technology. And exoskeletons is our primary focus, yet we're looking with that to launch our new website within the next month so that we can become the primary informational resource on anything to do with bionic exoskeleton technology. But also, what we want to do is fund individuals. We've launched quite a few different campaigns to help individuals get their own ReWalk exoskeletons. We've funded our first exoskeleton gift was to Walter Reed Rehabilitation Hospital for the veterans, and then we funded one in Vancouver. And so I'm looking at granting a couple, one to Craig Hospital, and then hopefully Lovelace Rehab in Albuquerque. And then the final part of our mission with Bridging Bionics Foundation is to advance and improve upon the research and development for this technology. And that's a whole different conversation that we can go into.
Yeah, that is. Now, and how many people could this technology potentially help?
Oh, well, we look at, I represent 1 in 50 in the United States who is paralyzed. And so 1.3 million have a spinal cord injury. The greater population, 1.6 million, have had a stroke. But it even expands beyond that. And we're just talking about the U.S. alone, that the numbers of individuals that can benefit from using an assistive device, such as an exoskeleton, is really vast, and the market is improving because the technology is improving. So this exo that I walk in and use from Exobionics with the variable assist modality helps someone who's had a stroke where they can improve their gait and relearn and rewire their brains, and so that they can hopefully walk on their own 2 feet. And that's the goal. So the goal is to target as many people as possible to get them up and walking again.
You can call and join the conversation, 1-800-933-5372. And Michael is calling. Let's go there in Fort Worth.
Yes. I was wondering if you can see it ever going to helping people who are just really limited. I've got a really bad back, and I'm really limited in, like, what I can lift and how I can move, if you ever see the technology going in that direction.
Thanks, Michael. Amanda, any thoughts?
Yes, it's a really important question and great question to ask, in that this technology, over in Japan, there's a company called Cyberdyne, and they've created the HAL, H-A-L, and it's an exoskeleton that is primarily used for augmenting strength and helping the elderly and people with muscle weakness and back pain. And so this is a perfect application, and it's just constantly being improved upon. So yes, I see that this is a technology that is going to become a part of everyday standard living, where it won't just help someone who's paralyzed. It'll become a standalone product, to use that analogy, in that I believe that it will help anybody who has some type of lower extremity weakness, or, and there's other technologies out there with, you know, that just help augment just limbs alone that we can strap on and use. So it's happening, and it's an we're in a very exciting day and age.
How do you get around when you're not using an exoskeleton?
I get around daily in a wheelchair. I'm sitting here talking with you in my wheelchair right now. It's a manual wheelchair, and I feel limited. Yes, it gives me freedom of mobility, and I'm grateful for it and all that it's brought to my paralyzed life. Yet, how do we improve upon that? And I make it a point every day to have a regimen to get out of my wheelchair, and it's not pretty. I get on the floor. I use a Galileo side alternating vibrational device to help strengthen and build my bone density, to reduce my tone and my spasticity. And so I do everything that I can to bring mobility to my life. If you're able-bodied and you're out there and you spend all day sitting at your computer, how do you feel? How do you feel when you get out and walk? And if we can each walk 10,000 steps a day, if we can do a couple of miles a day, then we're going to lead a healthier existence. When we sit, we begin to die. So now multiply that by however many for someone who's paralyzed. And that's why I'm so passionate about what I do.
The photo that's on your Twitter account, it shows you seated in your wheelchair. Mm-hmm. And I think it's on the shore of a lake. You're surrounded by mountains, and you're smiling big, and you have this dog with both paws on your lap. how important has having a service dog been for you?
I wonder who takes care of whom. my dog that's Benson, and he's a golden retriever, and I've been training him to be a service dog and to assist me, but mostly he brings companionship and love to my life. It's difficult. We go places and he gets me out, but I'm unable to take him hiking and into the wilderness. And so that's where I have to get creative and think of other modes of transportation. The robot, it's interesting that you bring up my dog and the wilderness. I live in a beautiful place in the Rocky Mountains in Aspen, Colorado. And I had a dog named Tucker who lived for 12 years and 9 months. And he was, I've never known a love like that. And when he passed, he passed 4 days before I received my own bionic exoskeleton suit. And so I call my exo Tucker in honor of him, and we still go for walks daily.
Do you think you could ever develop that sort of companionship with an exoskeleton, almost like with a pet?
That's a weird question.
I don't, but you call it Tucker.
But I call it Tucker. And, you know.
Is that possible?
Well, I have a fondness, of course, for the technology because it makes me feel better and takes away my pain. And, I mean, imagine the day where we have a brain machine interface, which is being developed and worked on at the University of Houston, to look at how we can weave thought into robotics, into exoskeletons, where they truly become an extension of our sensors. And haptic technology, I mean, imagine the day where it is a part of me. And it becomes a part of me. But today, the exoskeleton is a part of my own body map. I've been able to have a greater sense of where my body is in space with this device.
You can join our conversation about exoskeletons and learning to walk for the second time by calling 800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org. Let's go now to Anadu in Allen.
Hi,
how are you doing?
Doing good. I had a quick question. My son suffers from cerebral palsy, and I was interested in knowing if this exoskeleton can be used in conditions like cerebral palsy, which is not necessarily related to the walking per se, but he cannot walk because of the coordination. So I was just interested in knowing if this technology is useful in cerebral palsy kind of situation.
Great. Have you seen anyone using this with cerebral palsy, Amanda?
You know what? I have. Cerebral palsy is a difficult one. As long as there's alignment with the body and the joints are aligned and we don't have joint contractures. So not every person will qualify to get in this technology at the moment. We need to meet certain inclusion criteria to be able to fully weight bear on our legs and to be able to have complete range of motion of our joints. And so that's why it's really important for your son to maintain his range of motion and flexibility in his heel cords, in his hamstrings, and his hip flexors. So I have seen that. And now that brings us to another point of creating exoskeletons for pediatrics, for children. And Exobionics is looking, and they've started creating a pediatric version. They've been experimenting and exploring with a facility in Atlanta, Georgia, with this. And then there's Mick Ebeling with the Not Impossible Foundation, and he has been working with a bunch of students to create a device that is on a treadmill and a harness, kind of like an exoskeleton, but specifically designed for children with cerebral palsy. Now, again, it's at the beginning stages. So look forward to a future is my message to you. Keep your son fully flexible and keep his range of motion. And he, too, will stand up and walk on his own two legs with the help of technology. I'm a firm believer that he will.
Amanda, you've said that unlike wheelchairs, exoskeletons don't come with this connotation, this history of disability, of being a symbol of disability. Do you think that that's just because they haven't been around for very long?
Yes, I think so. I think it's brand new technology, but I think it goes beyond that. What it does is it blends a person into whatever is perceived as normal. And normality or normalcy for me is standing up at eye level so that I can go to a cocktail party. I can go into a store, have a heart-to-heart hug, be in the body, in my 5'7" frame that I was born to grow into. And that's where this technology is going to merge and blur the line between biology and technology and bring us closer to that point of singularity, if you will.
In 2007, you began stem cell treatments in India, which you've mentioned are somewhat controversial, but they returned some feeling to your legs. Would you be able to use the exoskeleton if that hadn't happened?
Absolutely. So this technology is for anybody who has a complete level of injury. The one that I walk in is works for anybody with a cervical 7 level of injury down, where they're completely paralyzed from, say, their shoulders down. Rexbionix exoskeleton suit, it can help someone with a cervical level of injury higher up to walk, depending on their level of paralysis. So there's a full spectrum there, Lauren, from someone who has very extreme paralysis to someone who is walking, say, with multiple sclerosis and needs to retrain, relearn, improve upon their gait so that they can get out of the device and walk on their own two legs and feet, but with an improved gait. And so it's a gait training therapy tool.
Where can someone try one of these tools now without having to shell out $100,000?
Well, that's really interesting. There's a there are rehabilitation facilities around the country. So with outpatient clinics, and they're getting more and more readily accessible around the country. So say you live in Denver, you can go to Craig Hospital. They have the PEAK Center, P-E-A-K, Center for Outpatients. You can sign up just like a gym membership and go try one of three exoskeleton devices there. It could be the Indigo from Parker Hannifin, which is this amazing 26-pound device, a ReWalk, or an Exo. And so there's different facilities all over the country in the top rehab centers, but also then some gymnasiums across the country
as well. And we'll try and put some of those links online. That's Amanda Boxtel. She's executive director of the Bridging Bionics Foundation. Amanda, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me today.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is associate producer with help on the phones today from Jose Carreon. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington. And you can contact us via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Lauren Silverman in this week for Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great afternoon.